Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Classic Elite. We are on episode 64, so this is going to be pretty much a Nintendo 64 extravaganza. Joining me tonight are DB and Tony. Unfortunately, Gooch is a little under the weather, so he's not going to be here. But, yeah, Nintendo 64 all night. You guys pumped up?
Not all night, but for the next couple hours, yes.
For the next 64 minutes and 64 seconds, it's the Nintendo 64 week.
That's right, folks. We're timing it.
That would be some magical editing, especially since 64 seconds is impossible. But I'll see what I can do with the timestamp.
Well, 1 minute, 4 seconds. Yeah. It technically is possible.
So it'd be 65 minutes and 4 seconds? Is that the hidden Nintendo 64 time signature?
Yeah, sure, whatever you say.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, we have a lot to talk about on this episode before we actually get to all of our Nintendo 64 talk. We have another awesome interview. This one will really impress you guys. So I'm looking forward to everyone to hear that. And then also, we've got a few announcements from Tony, some cool news, and DB and Tony are also going to catch us up on their trip to Columbus, Ohio for MatsuraCon. So, Tony, you've got a few announcements, so why don't you go ahead and get some of those out of the way up front?
Alrighty, well, probably the biggest announcement we have is we just want to continue to let our listeners know that we have merged with GNDB, and we actually got some positive feedback in the mail comments this week, so we're pretty excited to read that at the end of the show. I do want to let everyone know that we are currently a featured guest on gotgame.com, so all of our podcasts and reviews will be listed. Any videos that we do, I guess I should say, will be listed on gotgame.com. We can be found under two categories on the title bar. First of all, the category of audio for our podcast, and then also under the category of reviews, and that's where all of our videos are housed. So pretty exciting. Got Game is a pretty sweet site if you haven't checked it out before. So go on there, join, and just start commenting on a lot of good content and videos. And check us out over there. That's pretty much all I got for announcements. And I think we, DB, you have a couple, right?
Yes. We're finally wrapping up the Mortal Kombat Street Fighter Challenge, which started way back in April. And it's been a long, hard battle. He fought through the trenches. He came out of nowhere. The Cinderella story. Ken Masters 2010 is the official winner of the Mortal Kombat Street Fighter Challenge. Congratulations to Ken Masters 2010. You've earned it for being such an obscure video game character as you are. But the people have spoken, and they wanted Ken Masters 2010. So congratulations.
You rigged it.
Guys, I'm currently on the other line with Ken Masters 2007, and he's pissed.
Now, we did announce that there would be a game given away to one of our winners who voted for Ken Masters 2010. We will do that next week when the Gooch is able to join us. We'll let him draw the winning name, and he'll be announcing that over the air next week. So stay tuned for that to see if you're walking away with a free game, courtesy of Gamersgate.com, anytime, anywhere. The only place that all of us play our PC games through Gamersgate.com.
That's right. And I did end up getting Back to the Future from Gamersgate with the summer sale, $9.98. I got it right after the episode last week.
Bam! Did you play it?
No, I have not yet. I've been actually too addicted to A Link to the Past. I had never played that game before and am absolutely just completely hooked. It's been the only game I've been playing lately. So it's going to be hard for me to talk about Nintendo 64 this week because I'm in Super Nintendo mode, but I think I'll manage. But yeah, no, I have not played it yet. I will though. Some afternoon that I'm just completely bored and I'm in the mood to watch a movie, I'll just try to play through one of those episodes. So
very nice. I'll tell you what, after playing the games, it would always make me want to go back and watch the trilogy all over again.
Oh yeah, nice.
I'd be such in the Back to the Future zone, or I just want to watch something with Michael J. Fox or Christopher Lloyd. Just one or the other, just because I just so much into Back to the Future.
Yeah, you know what's hilarious is like I love Netflix, and since we've been talking about RoboCop and the Neil Before Zod quote from Superman, I freaking watched Superman 2 and RoboCop 2 this week. RoboCop 2 is so bad.
It's such a terrible movie.
I totally forgot how cheesy it was.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as RoboCop 3.
This is true.
They're both pretty awful.
Wow. RoboCop 2 is beyond bad.
I always felt bad for the little girl in RoboCop 3, though. The little punk kid that was like the drug dealer guy in RoboCop 2, I never felt bad for him.
Yeah, he gets blasted away in RoboCop 2, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, he does.
The second RoboCop 2, blows him away in the... It's supposed to be like an armored truck full of like nothing but money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Money, exactly. And gold bars.
Yeah, because that's what people stole in the 80s.
Yes.
In Detroit.
So, yeah.
Lots of gold bars in Detroit.
There were, until a little kid stole them all.
Yes.
And then, before we actually get to hearing you guys talk about Matt Surikhan, here on the show notes, this is pretty random, but I'll cover it anyways. Someone put down here that the Sunday NFL ticket is coming to PlayStation 3, which is pretty cool, but holy crap, that's a price tag. $340 is a lot of money to pay for the NFL ticket, when for roughly the same price, you could probably get DirecTV, and that's included this year.
They were saying, what I've read about, if you have DirecTV, that's only $5 more than what you're paying for if you have a regular DirecTV subscription. So if you have DirecTV, you're paying $335 per year for NFL Sunday ticket, whereas this is for users who do not have DirecTV. But you're still paying for the streaming service, which could still be kind of catchy if you live in an area that you don't have great internet access. To me, that's a jip. That's a big, massive ripoff. Just for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if like you live in an apartment complex and you're not able to get DirecTV, so you can't have any access to it, and if you're a big fantasy football player or something like that, then maybe it might be worthwhile for you. People have been paying outrageous sums for the ticket anyway, so, you know, if you have a PS3 and you're in an apartment complex, maybe it's not so bad if you're willing to pony up for it, but not me. I'll find, like, a channelsurfing.net or myptp.eu or something if I really need to watch a game.
You'll have alternative sources.
Yeah. So, yep. I hear you. Sunday's my fun day. I'm not a big fantasy football player, so... as long as I can see most of the Lions games, I really don't care what else is played. And I live in the Detroit market, so it works out for me.
Good RoboCop and Barry Sanders. Woo!
Love it. So, Tony, what are your thoughts on the price tag for the PS3? Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's good?
I think that they, no NFL fans are pretty much idiots and will pay anything to watch the sports, so I think it's fair. Because it's, open market.
It is nice if you're willing to pay for it to have an alternative way to access it. So.
Yeah, I am an NFL fan. I would never pay $340 to watch it on my PS3 or anything.
Here's the big kicker. If you have DirecTV and you have a PS3 and you have already subscribed to the NFL Sunday Ticket, all you have to do extra to watch your NFL Sunday Ticket on your PS3, you just pay the low sum of $50 extra.
That's odd.
That's stupid. I mean, that's downright stupid.
I don't know. Maybe it's for their bandwidth. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, think of it this way, too. If you have Xbox Live, a gold Xbox Live account, you get ESPN3 for nothing.
Yes. Which is
absolutely
awesome.
Nothing. Yes. And I think the Major League Baseball Network, I believe that's on PS3, and you pay, $15 or $20 a month for that? So I don't know. The NFL's always been more of a money pit for fans and for users of the NFL. And I'm a big fan of the NFL. I'm a big Cleveland Browns fan just because I'm glutton for punishment, I guess. But there is no way I would pay that much money for it.
I guess if I had DirecTV and a PS3, I couldn't see myself spending $50 because odds are I'm going to have my cable box that is in HD hooked up to the same TV as my PS3. So I doubt I'd be really going from room to room anyways, so I wouldn't see a need to have another ticket, on another device. So Interesting stuff, though. So if anybody has any thoughts on that, you can let us know at classicelite@gmail.com. So, DB, I definitely have to get your thoughts on Matsurakon. What do you think? What were your impressions of it?
Well, I did not know what to expect when getting there, and Tony will tell you right off the bat. We had some problems getting set up. We were treated like, I don't know, like second-rate citizens, it seemed like. But once we finally got our table going, it was an absolute and total blast. I had so much fun going out there, hanging out, meeting Tony for the first time in person. The Gooch was there. We met one of Tony's buddies named Jeremy, who's one of the writers for the show. All sorts of very creative people in very creative costumes mixed in with the anime and gaming, I guess you call it the gaming universe. I had a ball, and I can see why you all had so much fun. I believe you all went to Toledo, was that right, to one of the gaming conventions up there, one of the anime conventions?
Yep. Yeah, so I call it GlassCon, since it's the Glass City.
Yes, I mean, I would do it again in a heartbeat. I don't want to get dressed up, I'm not that creative, but I want to go and see what other people come up with.
Yeah, that was my thing. It's a little out of my comfort zone to dress up in a costume, but it was pretty cool to walk around with an X-Men shirt on, just kind of hanging out with everybody. Tony, what for you were some of the differences between Matsurakon and GlassCon?
Well, I don't want to trash Matsurakon, but, you know, like, it was pretty unorganized, so I'll just be honest about that. Like, it was just, you know, like DV said, it was real frustrating getting there. No one could tell us where to go, where our table was, all that stuff. So,
I gotcha.
There was no separate line for registration with the press, and since we were there at the press, we had to wait in the normal registration line, which we got lucky and got bounced close to the front, but it was about, you know, like a 2.5 hour line altogether. So
holy crap.
Yeah, so it would have been, you know, other than that stuff aside, Matsurakon was fun. It was really big, and really that's probably the biggest difference between that and Glass City Con is Matsurakon, like, had a larger venue with a lot more special guests, you know, like the Walker guy, the guy with the glasses was there.
Doug Walker.
Yeah, Doug Walker. Jennifer Hale, who we interviewed, who is will be on this episode. You know, the voice of Naomi from the Metal Gear Solid series, and then also from Female Shepard from the Mass Effect series. And so it was really cool to be able to interact with some of those people. As far as fans, though, everyone was still really nice, really great. You know, it was just great. We gave away a bunch of games, and, you know, we had like 125 people sign up for the giveaway. And, yeah, it was just a lot of fun just to interact there, spend the entire day there, just have a lot of fun. So, yeah, for me, I'm a huge fan of cons, even though I've only been to two, and I look forward to going to more with the show. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something, Scott.
Sure.
Okay, one of the biggest people in the voice acting department, Jennifer Hale, very big into video games, animes, and American animation. Would you think her autograph line would be ginormous and would take forever to get through?
I would assume so, since she's been in such popular games.
You know, her line was probably the shortest out of all of them that was there.
Really?
Yeah, we were the first people to get up there and talk to her. Had very few people around her for autographs.
Huh, that's... Maybe was it more of an anime focus? And since she's more, into gaming, or has she done a lot of anime too?
She's done a lot of anime too. So
interesting.
My thing was, since people don't actually see her in person, like they hear her voice, they may not know who she is. Because Doug Walker had a huge following.
Huge, yeah.
I was thinking his line would be quite large, because the guy's very popular on the internet, and I love his work. I mean,
he's
absolutely
good.
Hysterical. Would have loved to have got an interview with him, but I pointed this out to Tony. When he was walking in, he looked a little bit nervous. Did you not agree, Tony?
Yeah, he did. Really nervous.
And I was like, I was kind of afraid to ask him. I thought he might pee himself or something. But Jennifer Hale was incredibly nice to us. We got some pictures taken with her. We got some autographs. I had the very extreme privilege of interviewing her, and I got to tell you guys, I was starstruck. I was trying not to pee myself, you know, speaking of which, just interviewing her. I mean, I was really taken away by that, and that absolutely made my year, getting to interview her.
When I saw you guys talking, when I saw some Twitter stuff come through that you guys had interviewed her, my first thought was, man, I hope DB's the one that talked to her, just because I know you. big Mass Effect fan. I was like, oh man, I hope he's the one that got it.
It was a quick interview, but it was a very, very, it's quick but in depth and sweet at the same time. And
yeah,
I could not have asked for anything better.
No, you did great, man.
And she didn't have a lot of time. She was on her way to one of her panels, and so like we had like a 5-minute window to do an interview. So we were just thankful to have that opportunity. So
absolutely,
yeah, DB, you nailed the interview, man. Great questions. So
shabam, that's what I'm here for.
It'd have been nice if you weren't humping her leg and being yourself, but
no, that was Jade.
Oh, that's right.
So, actually, speaking of the interview, let's take a quick break here and let all of you listeners hear DB's interview with Jennifer Hale, and we'll be right back.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Classic Elite Radio. I'm Josh, and I've got the one and only Jennifer Hale, the Mass Effect series. You probably know her as Commander Shepard, also Naomi Hunter from the Metal Gear Solid series. How did you get involved with Mass Effect and just in gaming in general, being the wonderful voice actor that you are?
Thank you. Auditioned. You know, we all auditioned for the roles, and I happened to get lucky enough to book some really great roles. Metal Gear was quite a while back, back in the late 90s. We actually started that game. And Dave Hayter and Debbie May and Kim Mai, all of us, we all read for Chris Zimmerman, and we all ended up in the game for a long time. None of us realized it would go on that long. And we're really happy that it did. And Mass Effect has been just a phenomenal thing to be a part of. Phenomenal.
Now, with Mass Effect 3 coming up, is there any hints or spoilers you might be able to tell us about, or very like a sneak peek preview?
No.
Okay, I had to try. I had to try. Big fan.
Everyone does. I'm not allowed. I am not allowed.
Now, with doing anime and doing video games, is there anyone you prefer more or less? Which one you like better or worse or equal? Or how do you feel about it?
They're all different. Regular animation, video games are very different. In animation sessions, you typically get to work with the other people when you record. In a game session, it's just you. It's like a one-woman show for 4 hours. And so they're very different in that way. They have different kinds of demands. Yeah.
And one more question before we let you go here. Any type of future aspects or prospects you have coming up, gaming, anime, and anything else coming up in the future?
Yeah, Avengers is coming out. We've got some great Green Lantern episodes coming out as well. I just did a set of either 10 or 12 episodes of an anime Wolverine and X-Men series. X-Men, I can't remember exactly how they're titling it, but that should be coming out very soon. Mass Effect 3 is coming out. Gosh, a bunch of stuff going on. So.
Staying busy,
yes.
Which always, that's got to be great.
Yeah, really great.
Josh Pertee from MatsuiCon and with Miss Jennifer Hill. Thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks to all the fans.
All right, and we're back. Jennifer, thank you very much for taking the time to meet with everybody at MatsuiCon. Awesome interview. DB, you did a great job again. So thank you, everybody, for participating in that. I'm looking forward to getting that into the episode. It's going to be really cool for everyone to hear. So hope you guys enjoyed. Well, since we are on episode 64, and I mentioned that we're going to have a 64-heavy episode, before, and actually we do have another interview that we'll be getting to, the real big interview of the episode. A lot of this information on the 64 is going to lead up to the interview, and it's with someone from EA Sports. Now, the Nintendo 64, it got its name because it had a 64-bit PCU in it, and PCU, CPU, and it was released in 1996 over in Japan in the summer, and then in the early fall in September, it was released here in North America, and then according to Tony's lovely show notes, throughout 1997 was released around the rest of the world. So as far as a few other facts that we have, Tony, you've got a couple to go over, don't you?
Yeah, well, if you don't know anything about the Nintendo 64, you probably shouldn't be listening to a gaming podcast, but we will try to educate you a little bit. The Nintendo 64 was Nintendo's third home console, and it was the last one that they made that actually used the ROM cartridges to not only store games, but, you know, house everything. And so if you remember, the NES used cartridges, so did the Super Nintendo, and then the Nintendo 64. Before Nintendo switched over to the dumbass format that it used in the GameCube, those mini CD things.
That was dumb.
The Nintendo 64's retail price in the U.S. at launch was $199. Man, I love Nintendo 64. What else do we know about it, DB?
Well, with that launch of $199, that did not include a game. So you had to buy your game separately, and you had two launch games. You had Mario 64 and Pilot Wings 64. The N64 also sold 32.93 million units worldwide, and in 2009, it was named the ninth greatest video game console by IGN out of a field of 25. The Gucci myself made it the fourth greatest console on our list of the top 10 greatest consoles of all time. You can check that out at youtube.com/GucciandTheDoucheBag.
Very cool. One thing I do remember, Tony, just going back to what you had mentioned about it using cartridges, I do remember in high school having an argument with my friend who had a PlayStation 1. And I remember him telling me just how much better the PlayStation was, and me being over at his house and pointing out how there's no loading with the N64. Some games have a little bit of loading, but if anybody remembers, the PlayStation 1 had significant loading times, and that was one of the things that Nintendo chose, was to go with the cartridge base, just because it was so much faster. It didn't have the same amount of power and oomph, but I think that they had to assume, with the creativity that they had in the Nintendo team, that they would have been fine without having all the power behind it, which unfortunately is a pattern that they've decided to continue to follow, but it was pretty cool at that time that there was a fork in the road, if you will, on the actual physical media, whether it was a cartridge or a disc. So, yeah, that was definitely cool. And I wonder how long it's going to be until Nintendo actually completely does away with any sort of physical cartridge. Right now, they still have the DS, the 3DS and the regular DS with cartridges. It'll be interesting to see what they finally do with the 3DS as far as downloadable content and how far they take the eShop channel.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nintendo always sticks to its guns, and you know, they've been a big, long-time fan of cartridge-based games, and I think we've seen the benefit of that from consoles like the DS. So, you know, I personally miss cartridges. I love, you know, adding games to my Nintendo 64 collection, just seeing all those little rounded gray cartridges just makes me happy inside. So
What I miss most about cartridges is how much more durable they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, unless you spill, like, water directly into it, it's going to be safe. There's a, what's her name? Rinri Game or something like that? There's a YouTube girl, and she, we may have talked about this before, but have you guys seen the torture that she puts an NES card through? Like drilling a hole in it, like leaving it in the snow overnight, driving over it, and it still works.
Really?
Yeah, and it still works.
I have not seen that.
We'll have to remember to put a link in the show notes. Yeah, Rinri Game or something like that's her YouTube channel.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we gotta get her on the show.
It was really creative. I think she's Canadian. I think. But yeah, anyways, very very cool video. She makes a lot of good retro stuff, so if you like female gamers that are into retro stuff, you should check her out. But yeah, it's a really, really funny and well-made video.
Well, that's funny, Kid, that you mentioned her driving over a cartridge, because I took my copy of Mortal Kombat 4 for the Nintendo 64. I drove over it the other day to see if it would make it. My tire popped, and a voice from the heavens yelled, "Fatality."
Oh, Tony. I don't believe you. It might have happened.
No matter what you guys think, I'm cracking myself up, so eat it, suckers.
Now, were you just driving over it, or were you just stepping on it?
No, I drove over it.
Now, what did you guys think of the controller? Back in the day, it was revolutionary, but does it hold the test of time compared to a more revolutionary controller with a 360 or the new remodified PS3 controller? What do you guys think?
Even back then, I didn't really care for it a whole lot. I was coming from, you know, a 16-bit era, so I still liked using the D-pad. And because of that, I didn't like the way that my hand had to be positioned on the, it felt like I was holding a gun left-handed. I don't know, it wasn't quite right for me. But I didn't mind it. The games that I loved, I loved. They utilized the Z button really well, the trigger mechanic or whatever. So it wasn't horrible, but it felt like it wasted a whole third of the remote. So that was my issue with it. What about you, Tony?
I have to agree with you, Scott. I sometimes always felt like a controller from the future came back to the past and had sex with an old controller and gave us an Nintendo 64 controller. Because it feels like that awkward child between the two generations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, we're coming from like the strictly 2D analog world to the like new completely 3D games. And it just kind of felt like in between, you know, like I always hated having to either hold one side of it or, you know, cause it just like the three prongs, you know,
just
threw me off a little bit, but probably I dealt with it okay. And I think the most frustrating, part was like the second, wait, let me think. Ah, never mind. I think I just used to, if it would have had like a second analog stick, that would have made me more happy. So.
Did you guys ever have, issues with the analog stick wearing out kind of quickly? I felt like anyone's house I ever went to, there was always one 64 controller that had a crappy analog stick.
The only time I had a problem with that, if the controller was not made by Nintendo, it was a third-party controller that seemed to happen quite often, but
yeah.
not with my name brand Nintendo 64 controllers. Now, personally, I thought the controller worked. It was bulky. It was different. But Nintendo had nothing else to go by. This was their first attempt at a 3D controller.
Yeah.
However, I've got to mention the 3D controller from the Sega Saturn, which was very similar to a Sega Dreamcast controller. That thing completely rocked. That would have been a perfect model for them, but then it'd be copyright issues, so they couldn't use that model.
Yeah.
But for going into it for a first time trying out a 3D controller, it worked. It does not hold up now, but it did work.
That Saturn controller is the one that came with Knights, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that controller was freaking amazing. Like, literally amazing for its time. So
literally, it is one of the greatest controllers ever made. And I will still bet money on that. Love it.
Cool. Well, Tony, what else do you have to talk about specifically with the 64?
Well, as I mentioned, the Nintendo 64, one of my favorite consoles of all time. I was an early adopter of the console, so I had it, I think, 3 months after it came out. I was really excited about this episode we decided to do, and I wish Gooch could be here because he's the one that brought up the idea.
Yeah, it was his idea.
But he's like, I'm ducking out of this one in case it sucks. So, but yeah, so I love the Nintendo 64. Probably my formative gaming years were with the Super Nintendo. And so yeah, I was a huge Nintendo fan back in the day. I did have a Genesis later on, but really Super Nintendo was kind of like that one console that was always there for me throughout school and things like that. I just always had it and just played tons and tons on it. And so I was really excited about their next console. I was kind of a little nervous about them going with the cartridge base over CD base and where that would stand in the industry. And then, you know, as I got older, I just realized that's what Nintendo does. They just kind of buck the industry and do their own thing. Some memories I have on a Nintendo 64. Probably my favorite one is the first game that I purchased, and that was Star Wars Shadows of the Empire. And have either of you guys played this one?
Is that the third person over the shoulder game?
It does third person, a little first person, and also some flying as well.
Was the flying kind of that game came out before Rogue Squadron, though, right? Wasn't there a Rogue Squadron-esque sort of a scene in it, like early on?
Yeah, it came out before Rogue Squadron.
I can't remember. I know that like in a really early episode, I couldn't remember if this was the one that my little brother had or not, but there was a third-person over-the-shoulder game that was really good that he had that was Star Wars.
Yeah, it was more third-person, like the full third-person, but it was kind of like the first attempt at some of the over-shoulder stuff as well. But the very first level of it is, you know, you're fighting on, it's Hoth, right, the Ice World, and you're taking down the giant mechanical things. I can't remember the name of them.
The AT-somethings or AT-ATs or something?
Yes, something like that. But anyways, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, which I has no credibility because I can't name those things. But, huge Star Wars fan, and so I was real excited about the Shadows of the Empire game. Really, for a couple of reasons. First of all, not only having a Nintendo 64 Star Wars game, but also really the first game that I encountered growing up that, you know, took it outside of the normal bounds of the stories that were told in movies. And so although it kind of fit into the Star Wars timeline, I remember, like, there was this huge boom of Star Wars literature that came out when I was in high school, starting with Shadows of the Empire, and tons of books that just kind of said, you know, we're not satisfied with just having the three movies, which is all they had at the time, but we actually want to expand out the universe. And so, like, at the local library, I remember tons of books coming in, you know, kind of expanding that story. And so in Shadows of the Empire, you actually play as Dash Rendar, and your efforts are to kind of help Luke Skywalker rescue Princess Leia from Prince Zizor. And it was just a really cool game because it combined some of my favorite scenes from Shadows of the Empire, or from Star Wars, and then also just kind of expanded on that story and on that universe a little bit. And on top of it, obviously, it was my first game that I purchased for Nintendo 64, so it seemed really badass for the time. So
nice.
Yeah. So that was it as far as my favorite memory of or favorite game for Nintendo 64 has to be Shadows of the Empire because it was the first one that I picked up. And then I also wanted to talk about some Nintendo 64 pickups I've had for my retro collection actually over the summer. It actually started with a Father's Day present my wife bought me. I mentioned on the show earlier this year my wife had bought me for Father's Day an N64 console for my collection, so I was pretty pumped about that. It's just the standard gray console, but it came with a brand controller, and it's in really good condition. And then I was at a pawn shop in the town I grew up in, and they actually have all their Nintendo 64 games for $3 a piece. And I actually got Zelda Ocarina of Time for $3, and then Yoshi's Story, which I still haven't played, but I never even knew that game was created for N64. And, have you guys played that one at all?
No.
I've seen it and I've heard of it, but I have never played it.
Yeah, so I was really surprised. So I picked that one up, and it was actually a really good deal for $3. I think the game goes for close to $20 used on Amazon. So,
wow.
Yeah, so it's a 2D Yoshi game, and so I definitely want to play that because I love the Mario series, and I'm sure it's a good game. So I'd like to get a review up of that sometime. But and then finally, the final pickup of the year I've had so far for Nintendo 64 was that my sister found a Star Wars edition console in box, had never been played. All the paperwork, the game and everything for $10 at a yard sale.
Wow.
So I was real excited about that. And so if you remember the Star Wars edition, it was the Episode I Racer. The movie came out during the console shelf life of the Nintendo 64. And actually, it's just a standard gray 64 with controller, but it comes with the Episode I Racer game, and then it also has a special edition box art for the, you know, limited edition. So although it's not is a ton of cool Star Wars stuff, it's still really neat to have that limited edition in box for $10. So great deal. But that's all I have as far as Nintendo 64 stuff. I'm actually going to get into one of my other favorite memories later for the question of the week. But, Scott, do you care if I go ahead and intro the interview this week?
No, I would. I'd love for you to do that. This one's really big, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yes, we actually were at MatsuraCon this weekend and got an interview with the douchebag. And
the one and only.
Yes. Yeah. So actually, we're really excited to have this person on the show this week, and it has nothing to do with Nintendo 64, so don't get too excited about that part of it, but it actually is just an amazing, amazing interview because, as everyone knows, this week is one of the largest weeks every year in the gaming industry, and that is the week that Madden NFL Football is released. And guess what? We have a copy in hand, and it doesn't come out until next week. And DB, you're actually reviewing it, right? Have you had a chance to dig in yet?
Not yet. I'm probably going to dive into it this weekend, and I cannot wait. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be awesome. And so DB's review is actually going to be published when the embargo lifts. We're pretty excited about that. It'll be at some point this weekend. And because Madden is being released, because we have a review copy, we decided why not get one of the developers from Madden NFL 12, the brand new Madden release that comes out next week, on the show. And we were lucky enough to have Mike Young, who is the creative director. Did you guys hear that? The creative director of Madden 2012. Here's our interview with Mike. Welcome back to episode 63 of Classic Elite. My name is Tony, and once again, we have a very special interview on the show this week. We want to welcome Mike Young, the creative director behind Madden 2012 football, to the show. How you doing today, Mike?
Great, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for making time for the show. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, your history with gaming, and how you came to work in the industry.
Well, I grew up in St. Louis. It was a big sports town, and I was always drawing pictures of Ozzie Smith, and grew up playing video games. I was hooked on and television football, television baseball, and loved it, you know, in the early 90s when NHL became the greatest game ever, and Tecmo Bowl, and went to college for art. And luckily, while I was there, the whole 3D gaming thing came about, and that's kind of how I got into games, through art and being able to do 3D models. And started my career working on NBA Street as an environment artist and writer, and worked on all of the NBA Street titles. Became the art director of the last one, NBA Street Home Court. And after that, I was able to transfer to the Orlando studio and work on Madden NFL. And I've spent the last 4 years as the art director and now creative director of that game.
Wow, congratulations. That's a pretty amazing career path. I know the NBA Street games were some of my favorites throughout the years, so it's pretty awesome to be able to talk to someone who's worked on those titles.
Yeah, I get that a lot. It's like, it's funny to work on Madden, and then every once in a while you get people that are like, wow, NBA Street. Like, yeah. It's still, like, you know, in my heart, like, honored. I was, like, one of three people who actually worked on every one of them. So there's still a bond with, you know, my old team, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Poured a lot of hours into those games. So I do want to talk, obviously, about Madden 12, though, as well. Can you give us just a quick overview of what the design team's goals were with this year's game?
Well, really, it was we kind of thought of it as a love letter to our fans. So how do we address as many of the requests that we've heard over the last few years, whether it be a franchise mode, stuff like expanded rosters and cut days, or, you know, progressive lighting, or flak jackets and back plates, you know, on the equipment end. So we just had this giant laundry list of stuff. And it was all, at the end of the day, it was really all about a simulation NFL experience, no gimmicks. So, you know, true broadcast presentation. That's really was the core.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you a lot about. I have played the demo. I've kind of gotten my hands on the game a little bit. I've really enjoyed it so far, and one of the things I noticed is what you mentioned, is that a huge emphasis was obviously put on the camera angles, the presentation, and really making it feel like you're there with the players on a Sunday afternoon. So tell us about some of those presentation changes. How were you able to provide such a great atmosphere in Madden 12?
Well, we've been building better tools for the last couple of years, and so there is a great foundation, but as far as like an execution standpoint, we got to this point where we're like, we need to work with the experts. A lot of people are really excited to work with Madden. They know about the Madden game, and we have great partners in NFL Films. And through Gus Johnson, we were able to reach out to the CBS broadcast teams and work with people like Troika, who designed, you know, the Sports Center and Monday Night Football graphics. So really, it's like over and over again, like, let's learn directly from the experts, or put their work directly into the game instead of having us as game developers kind of translate, you know, based on their reference. And that was like a, to me, like a big mental shift was, instead of trying to copy what we're seeing, let's really learn what's going on. So exact camera placements in every stadium, bringing in this virtual camera technology so the NFL films could actually film our scriptable. So it's not us saying, hey, this looks kind of like this footage I found. It's them through a virtual camera. We load up this, sideline shot of a player drinking water, and they're like, here's where I'd shoot this from. Here's where I'm allowed to be. Here's, the focal length I'd shoot this at. And then that motion was directly captured and put right into the game. And so I think that's what fans are picking up on is, we spent all this time with these experts and, we're learning how they do it. And as much as possible, they're the ones saying, here's how you shoot this. Here's the camera you need to choose. And so far, I think our fans have really, picked up on that and love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even in the demo, you just get this great feeling of like, wow, I really feel immersed in this game. And that's something I haven't always gotten before, but I think I've always desired, is something that felt just more like I was a part of the game. And you really do feel that from running out of the tunnel to the kickoff and everything. It was just really well done. So congratulations to you and your team.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, Madden, obviously one of the biggest game releases every year. It not only attracts new followers annually, but it also kind of hooks in the seasoned veterans and the people who would call themselves Madden pros. How do you and the team balance keeping the game fresh with new features to kind of draw in new people, but at the same time keeping those core gameplay mechanics in place so that Madden veterans still like the game?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think at times we've struggled with that, and we've introduced a feature to try to get the more casual NFL fan or the fan without a lot of time to play Madden at the expense of kind of, alienating our fans, our hardcore fans. But I think this year really it was about if we build true football just like they see it on TV, that excites everyone. And you can see that in some of the other sports games that, like NHL and FIFA, that's been their motto for years. They've never gone off that path. And their audience has grown by doing that. And I think with Madden, it was really about, let's not get off the mark of, gimmicks, I guess, and just stay true to a simulation football product. Everything we're adding is about getting more authentic details, whether it be, small details like a green dot on a helmet or, really improving the most important system, which is like a collision system, or representing how players actually play it. Like, to me, if a Troy Polamalu doesn't play like I expect him to, being a big fan of his, Madden's not as good of a game. So The dynamic player performance stuff, trying to make guys think and act like they do, not just capture their speed and, their physical attributes.
Yeah.
All those things were core to this year's game. And it's great to be, we got a new GM this year, and I really feel like his vision supports that. He's a former college football player, and I think, moving forward, we're not going to get that pressure to capture this new audience in kind of a gimmicky way.
Yeah, and it's awesome to hear how much that you've been able to integrate with the people who, do this from Sunday to Sunday that may not be in the gaming industry. So that's really amazing. And then to have a GM that played football is obviously a big plus, I think. So last question here, Mike. I know that your schedule is kind of crunched. So what does EA Sports have planned with Madden 12 as far as DLC is concerned? Can we expect any major updates throughout the season to the game?
There's no DLC plan for Madden 12 right now. The one thing you should expect is, constant updates with Madden Moments Live feature, which is like the coolest plays of the year, available the next week. So if you remember the DeSean Jackson, heroic, kickoff return to upset the Giants last year, that type of thing all year long. Amazing support for the Madden Ultimate Team, week to week having cool new cards, whether they be like breast cancer awareness versions of, Aaron Rodgers or, just some fantasy star that emerged that week. We do a really good job keeping that game that game mode up to date, and then the rosters, you know, constantly updating, you know, the players as we go through the season. And now we have even more power there with the hot and cold streaks. So if Ben Roethlisberger has a 5-interception game, we can now, Ben Roethlisberger's not all of a sudden a bad quarterback, but now we can put him on a cold streak for that week's roster.
Yeah.
So you're going to see that type of, you know, live support from us all year. And not saying there won't be any other updates, just there's nothing, you know, we've planned right now.
Well, I think that's plenty to keep players satisfied, and that sounds pretty amazing. So, once again, I want to thank Mike Young, creative director of Madden 12, for being on the show this week. And we really appreciate it, Mike, and hope you have a great rest of the day.
Thanks. Had a lot of fun.
Wow, guys, what an amazing, amazing interview. So pumped to have Mike Young, the creative director, on our show of Madden NFL 2012. Thank you again, Mike, for making time for us. I know you have an extremely busy schedule, especially with the game being released this week. Guys, what'd you think of the interview? Pretty awesome?
Very good. It really insightful. I'm impressed with how you handled it too, Tony. You did a really good job.
Well, it's just cool to see how amazing and how immersive they're trying to make the Madden experience.
Yeah.
I remember handing DB the game this weekend to use for review, and he looked at the back and he's like, man, it looks like you're on the field with the players just from looking at the pictures. And I was like, yeah, dude, I played the demo, and it's just an immersive experience. I mean, they put you down in the tunnel with the players running out. It feels like a Sunday presentation in an NFL football game. And so it feels like they just didn't focus that much on changing the game, but really making you a part of the game. And so I think people are going to be real, real excited to see our review of Madden and also check out the game for themselves next Tuesday when it's released, I believe. So pretty awesome.
That's the only route they can go with it now. They have to change the presentation. The gaming mechanics is already great, so you don't want to mess with that at all. And for my vote was to be to make it more of a television-style presentation, like if you're watching it on CBS, if you're watching it on Fox or ESPN or NBC, that's the route they got to go with it. And apparently what I was reading about with the paperwork that came with it is the more – different types of camera angles that you would see in a real live TV broadcast. That's one of the other things they're trying to add to it with more features into the options menu. So when I get a chance to really dive into the game, I'll definitely give you the full heads-up analysis of what I think about it. But as for the gameplay, you can't touch that. They've got that down pretty well.
And that's all for our interview segment this week. We do want to go ahead and dive right into the Deal of the Week segment. I do want to remind everyone, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over games this week, but go to GamersGate.com. The people at GamersGate are absolutely amazing, and they're having their summer sale right now. Last week we had Gustav Neisser on from GamersGate, working in the marketing area over there, and he was able to actually fill us in on all the goals that they have for GamersGate. So if you haven't listened to episode 63, please do check out our interview with Gustav, and make sure you head over to GamersGate.com, one of the longtime supporters of the show. They're having their summer sale. I mean, literally 4 to 5 pages of games marked all the way up to 95% off. I mean, it's just crazy. There are awesome games on there for 70 cents, a dollar. I mean, it's just crazy. So
I think it's like something around 400 to 450 games that are on sale right now.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to head over there and check it out for yourself. If you are a PC gamer, go to GamersGate.com. They really are innovative. I really believe it's the wave of the future with gaming. And yeah, jump on the train over there at GamersGate and get on their summer sale before it ends this Sunday, I believe, is the last day. So make sure you get over there. As far as Deal of the Week, since we had the creative director of Madden on the show, guys, I had to say one of my favorite N64 games I'm going to get to in a little bit, Madden 64. I'll probably get a lot of criticism for this, but you can get Madden 64 at J2 Games for $5.99. And remember, if you go to j2games.com, since they're a sponsor of the show, you can use the code CELITE, CL337, and get 20% off your entire order. That includes shipping and everything. So you can probably take Madden 64 home for less than $7 altogether. You got to get over there, J2 Games, and pick that one up. even if you hate Madden 64, pick it up anyways, because, yeah, we had the creative director on our show.
I don't know, Tony, is that really a deal at $6 for Madden 64? Now, granted, the cartridge is blue. The cartridge is blue, I'll give you that.
No, it's not. That's Madden 2000.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, don't give me your crap. Quit interrupting my deal of the week. So anyways, we're going to pretend that that little voice we just heard sounded like a DB. We're going to pretend we didn't hear that, okay? Get over to JT Games. Get Madden 64 for $5.99. DB, take it away.
Okay, let's. It's a 64 week here on the 64th episode of the 64th hour, the 64th minute of some of my favorite games, and oh boy, that just got added to my list. Okay, so favorite games for the N64, definitely. I'd have to talk about Mario 64. First game ever played for it. Went over to the Gooch's house. I believe he got it for his birthday, if I remember right. And I remember just playing the game for 30 minutes and not even going into the castle, Princess's castle. I would just run around the courtyard, jumping into trees and jumping out of them.
Yeah.
I did that for 30 minutes, just not even just doing that. And then going into the castle and jumping into the pictures, really getting immersed into the entire world of Mario. After that, I really got into Mario Kart a whole lot. I still play that one a whole lot. GoldenEye. Wasted a ton of hours playing in GoldenEye, playing the four party, the death matches, playing those just all hours of the night. Same thing with Mario Party. My buddies and I would stay up all night playing all the Mario Party games, like literally not going to bed and just playing that hours on end. I would have to say my favorite game out of all the 64 games is not a game that a lot of people would mention, but Mario Golf.
Yeah, dude, I love Mario Golf.
Yes, and that has to be, I don't know, it's one of those games, it was made by Camelot, it was the same company that's made the Hot Shots Golf series on the PlayStation, but definitely Mario Golf is my big time favorite game for the 64. What about you, Scott?
I'd say my favorite 64 game is Ocarina of Time. Definitely, I spent a ton of time with that. And then I would have to agree with the Mario 64. I never played that a lot, but the very first time I saw Mario 64, I was just completely blown away. And my favorite part was when you would race the giant penguin early in the game, kind of down a slide.
Yep, I remember that.
I couldn't get enough of that race. So you were stuck in the courtyard, and all I wanted to do was race a penguin.
That race was hard, if I remember
right. It was so hard. And you could fly off the edge and I believe land further down the track because you were, just kind of going downhill. But just an unbelievable game. I loved Mario Kart. I really liked Majora's Mask a lot, but I never completed it. One of the things that happened was I had, I knew that I was close to the end of the game. My brother and I were both playing through Majora's Mask. I never had a 64, but he did. So this was kind of his thing. And he was ahead of me, and he had just beaten the game. So I knew that I was really close. And my parents had their friends come over. And they had a daughter that was essentially like the Problem Child movies, except just a girl. Like, she was an absolute terror. And she managed to delete my Majora's Mask save, and I never had enough oomph to want to go back and play through that whole game again. I may now, since it's been so long, but I was just so disheartened. And that game, to me, was a lot more challenging than Ocarina of Time. I'm not sure why, and I'm not sure what the consensus is either, but for me, it was a lot harder. I loved not only Mario Golf, but I also loved Mario Tennis. I probably played... I played a lot more Mario Tennis than Mario Golf. So if I had to pick between those two, I'd go with Tennis.
One of my buddies absolutely, and I mean absolutely, hated that game. It would get to the point he would get so frustrated, he would literally close his fist and punch his controller as hard as he could. He still has the same controller, and it has the famous Nintendo death rattle. It still works. You could tell there's some plastic chunks in there just shaking away.
Yeah. I've punched a controller before, so I feel this pain there. a weird thing with the 64 in me is that I really never liked the GoldenEye game that much, and I really enjoyed James Bond, The World Is Not Enough, the sequel that was in, like, a blue cart. That game didn't really get nearly as much praise and was not even close to as popular as GoldenEye. But the thing that I remembered is I was never very good at those inverted controls where up is down and down is up in GoldenEye. So, you know, if I'm, you know, flying a plane or driving a car or something, those controls don't bother me. But when it comes to actually shooting things, it really messes with me. And James Bond, World Is Not Enough, allowed you to have original Bond controls or have it so that up is up and down is down. And I really liked that a lot. My brother and I actually, instead of playing against each other because he was so much better at Bond than I was, that what we would do is we would each pick a character and then we would set up Capture the Flag. And we would pick, like, Oddjob and Jaws, like two really hard guys to go against.
Oddjob. I hated that character.
Yeah.
You couldn't punch him.
You couldn't.
He's like 2 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly. So we would pick, like, those guys, and we would try to set them as, like, the hardest that we could. And that actually, the AI, when you set it at that difficulty level, was actually pretty good. And it was challenging for my brother and I to actually win. So that was pretty good time. And, I know Tony has a question of the week coming up, and I think I'll just spoil it now. My favorite Nintendo 64 moment is a tie. One, it has to be actually completing Ocarina of Time. That was so sweet. I couldn't get enough of that. And another one, and I know I've talked about this on other shows that I've been a guest of, but I don't know if I've talked about it here on Classic Leap. And it's the fact that my little brother taught me a really neat drinking game. If you like to consume beer and play video games, you have to play this game that he dubbed Drunk Driver. And essentially, you can't drink and drive, right? It's against the law. So what you have to do is, DB, let's say that you and I are racing each other.
Okay.
We have to finish our beer before we can actually cross the finish line. However, you can't drink and drive. So one of the strategies would be to just try to slam your beer and then finish the race clean just from there. Or wait till your opponent, like, falls off the course or gets hit by a turtle shell and then you also stop and then try to drink your beer that way. Or wait till the very end and slam it. But either way, it's actually an incredibly fun party game and a really cool, interesting way to play Mario Kart. And the first time that I ever experienced that was a couple of years ago when I was living in Cincinnati, my little brother and his friends were all playing that, and I was hooked, man. It's a really challenging but really fun way to play Mario Kart 64. So, I don't know, a toss-up between Ocarina of Time and that fun drinking game. So
I would so throw up if I did that. Yeah, that just isn't my thing.
You can cut it to half a beer.
I think my favorite moment, like, in any game in the Nintendo 64 era, when I finally got to beat Bowser in Mario Golf. For those of you who never played Mario Golf, Bowser is one of the final characters in the game that you unlock, and so is Donkey Kong. I had to go to extra holes to beat him after playing 18 holes. I went to about 3 or 4 extra holes and beat him hitting a hole in one.
Nice.
Because the game starts to cheat at the end. Like, Bowser and Donkey Kong both will start chipping in from like 200 yards out. And the only way you can beat him is you have to keep chipping in yourself. So you become a master at the game trying to beat these morons.
My friends in the dorm had that game, and we played tons of Mario Golf. And this was right as Tiger Woods was starting to become popular. I think this was maybe 2003 I was in the dorm. And, we used to play the heck out of Mario Golf. I never got that good, though, where I would have been able to beat Bowser, no way. But my friend Jameson, he definitely would have been able to. He was nuts at that game.
I think every now and then I'll dust off the old N64 and I'll fire up Mario Golf and Mario Kart just for some just good old fashioned reminiscing memories.
But oh yeah,
it's still a fun game and it's still fun to play today.
Oh yeah, no question. So, Tony, since I jumped in and took your question of the week, what is your favorite 64 game or moment?
Well, I guess we should say that is the question of the week for our listeners, is what is your favorite N64 game or moment? So please write in with your responses. We will read them on the air, and they will be heard worldwide. We're hoping all 30 of our listeners will take them to the ends of the earth. So
31.
That's right. wait, we just lost two because of the merger. 29.
That's true.
Probably my favorite N64 moment is one I've talked about a little bit on the show before, but since we had a Madden interview this week, I want to talk a little bit more about Madden 64. And that was the second game that I purchased for my Nintendo 64. I was a huge football fan back in the day, and so I was really excited to have a Madden release. Do either of you know why this game is unique, though?
Was it the first one that wasn't Madden by the year?
Maybe. No, it wasn't the first one. There was just John Madden Football way back in the day. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, Madden Football 64, it would have been, I think, 98 would have been the actual year of the game. And it got a pretty good rating overall, but it was actually the only Madden game to not have any licensed team names or logos. So it actually had licensed players, but not team names or logos, and it also couldn't have any NFL licensed material. Like the Pro Bowl was called the Madden Bowl, the Super Bowl was called the EAS Championship, and I forget what happened, but they had gotten somehow in the transition gotten stood up by another company for the licensing, and so they couldn't mention the team names. And so instead of mentioning like Arizona Cardinals, they called the team Phoenix. Minnesota Vikings were called Minneapolis. So they used the actual city name of the teams. They used the same colors and actually had real players, but not real team names or any of the logos or anything like that. So
what did they do about like Cincinnati and Cleveland and Pittsburgh?
Probably just called them that.
Yeah, they just called them. Yeah, just called them the city name.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so the reason it was also exciting is because Madden. I mean, between the Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64, that was a huge jump graphically. You know, and so back in the day, you know, I was in high school. I remember I bought this game for Christmas for my brother. And the Nintendo 64 was like, it was right around the time I had my first job. And so it was the first console I actually purchased with my own money. And so like buying a game was a big deal, you know, spending $50 on a game. And so I bought this game for my brother. And I remember like taking it upstairs, putting it under the bed so he wouldn't find it. And then like the very first night I owned it, he came in my room to hang out for a little bit, and we were going to play some games. And I was like, dude, I bought this for you for Christmas, but I can't wait. Let's play it now. And so we played it for like a month, and then I rewrapped it for him for Christmas and gave it to him. So pretty sweet.
Very cool.
Yeah, pretty sweet game. Even though it may suck by today's standards, for me, it was one of those games that, you know, I always remember and always want to have in my collection. So.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Go to J2 Games and buy it for $5.99.
So, yeah, cool. Well, I think that concludes everything that we needed to talk about with the 64, right?
I think so.
So we have some mail to get to. Is that correct?
We can do that. Or we can do the jukebox break.
Oh, the jukebox break. You know what? I forgot all about that. Let's do the jukebox break, and then we'll be right back with some mail. All right, and we are back. So if you have any guesses on which song that is, please write to us at classicleet@gmail.com or leave a comment on this episode. Last week's jukebox break, which unfortunately no one got right, was the was from the Super Nintendo. It was the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie theme song. It was an excellent pick. That one is brought to you by DB. So good choice, man. You had everyone stumped. So
nice. I was in a Power Rangers type of mood, and I'll tell you, that is a game that's it's really a guilty pleasure. A lot of fun to play. It's a two-player side-scrolling game. And I believe we'll have to do a little retro review on that.
Nice.
Give people a little video on that.
DB, I have to ask you, are you a closet Power Rangers fan?
I grew up as a Power Rangers fan. There's no that's no closet about it. I enjoyed it. Well,
I just noticed that Matt Surikhan, you're like, hey, did you see the White Ranger over there? Like, you kept pointing out the Power Rangers stuff, and I was like, I think DB's a legit Power Rangers fan. So.
When they went to Power Rangers Zero, yeah, Zio, they lost me on the hat. And then, I don't know, then they had like 14 different versions of it, and every season the whole story plot would completely change. So, like, the first, like, couple of seasons is when I was into it. And so was Gooch. He was a big fan of it, too. You know, it's goofy fun. I mean, it's a little bit of martial arts. All the people on the show had martial arts training. And it's, yeah, and it has a catchy theme song.
It does.
I mean, that real upbeat tempo. You just want to go out and just, you know,
I can somebody see, in place. I can see G and DB, you know, walking around as sixth graders dressed up like Power Rangers. So, good stuff.
DB, I know why you like the theme song. It's straight hair metal from the 80s.
Exactly. Yep.
It is hair metal.
Yes.
Oh, it's funny.
So cool. All right. Well, we have some mail to get to. We have one here from our friend Carl, also known as Triverse, the owner of Scenic 7PR. And he says, hello, gentlemen. First up, I am quite surprised as what has transpired between the two shows. He says, I am exactly a big fan of it. I think he means I'm not exactly a big fan of it. The completely different style of each show is not as easy to match up, is not an easy matchup to say the least. I'm not writing to make an argument for you guys splitting up. I'm writing to answer the question of, what I like to see from the merger. So, Carl says, he would like to see a more point counterpoint, method to the content. He says, not arguments, but pros and cons. Someone take the pro side of a popular title review, and someone take the con side and have it in a debate format. This is something we planned on doing on Video Game Cowboy Radio, but, well, it never materialized due to various problems with scheduling and life. Point counterpoint would work really well with the variety of hosts on the show, and less likely for fans to be able to guess who's going to take what side before the show is even heard. Keep up the good work, guys. It's sad to see G and DB Radio end, but would even be more sad if they left podcasting altogether. Just want to let you guys know, Screwed and Reviewed magazine will be available at PAX, which is awesome. So everyone, check out Screwed and Reviewed magazine because there's a Classically ad in it, which is cool.
Yes,
this
and
means.
We'll, oh. All right. Oh, yeah. Sir.
He says this means that the convention goers that purchase the magazine on site will hopefully see our ad and another step towards world domination. So, Carl, thank you very much. And, guys, I think that's a really, really good idea as far as having a point-counterpoint argument with titles. Even if it's – I'm picturing – kind of like in high school when you have debate class or whatever, and even if you don't necessarily believe the side of the debate that you're on, you still have to formulate your arguments. And so even if you're not necessarily a big fan of a particular title, you still sometimes will be taking the pro approach. So I think that's kind of a cool idea. It'll allow us to do some research, but one-sided research, which is maybe a little easier to do, and I also think that it could actually start some pretty good conversation. What do you guys think?
Just like PTI, pardon the interruption.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love it. So, yeah, Carl, we will definitely be trying to implement that. And
And just for our listeners, that email right there is one that we would call a good constructive criticism email.
I agree.
Yes. So thank you, Carl, for being professional and not writing us an email that started with the words F you and ended with screw you guys.
I'm going to him.
Go home. Get in the kitchen.
So, but yeah, no, we... Tony, Critical Failure wrote in as well. Do you have his email up or do you want me to read that?
I have it up. Yeah, our good friend CF wrote in. He says, "Hey guys, CF here. Just wanted to write in quickly and support the merger. It's nice to hear GNDB back in action again. Props on wrangling those southern flapjack-eating dudes into talking about video games. So what J2 Games promo code should we use now, GDB or CLEET? Anyways, keep up the good work and keep making podcasts." Well, actually, if you use the code GDBCLEET, you'll get 40% off your entire order. Hurry before the link's broken. No, I don't really care which one you use, so yeah, go for it.
Yeah, whichever you had been using, I guess.
Yeah, and then thank you so much for writing in to support the merger, but more importantly, to support podcasting. I think it's good to have as many gaming podcasters as we can. So thanks for writing in, CF. We do stand, you know, I was just talking to DV and Scott about it. We do stand by our decision to, you know, continue with the merger. We think it's the best thing for all four of us professionally, and also, you know, it's a good new challenge and a fresh wind for both shows to come together. So, yeah. DB, what do you have for some fan mail this week?
All right, I've got a few messages here. And going back to what you're saying, Tony, it's just like Novocaine. You got to keep rubbing it in. It's going to work eventually.
Just like he was rubbing my shoulders with Novocaine this week.
He's got to give it some time. Mm-hmm. Got a message here from Balzac, longtime listener. He goes on to say, "Just finished listening to this episode, and it was a bit of an improvement over the last episode with the classic GNDB formula of going completely off topic with talking about games in one scene, then going to talking into RoboCop talk in another, but the new style still did not feel right, and I would rather prefer you guys do two separate podcasts. Just still my previous complaint, and that most of the classic GNDB radio podcasting trends are just too inappropriate for classic lead. For example, the bag sound effects, jokes about the male organ, and the classic GDB podcast subtitles such as 'You Just Got Stuffed Edition' can't be used because they won't match classic lead's more warp-safe tone. But I guess it's better for you guys to stick to the merger now, since it would be much worse for you guys if we're forced into making two separate podcasts you guys don't want to make. So just stick to what you guys want to do, and maybe in the future we'll all get over it. But keep the number two and number one worst consoles of all time to GNDB, only because that list started with GNDB and only should end with GNDB only. P.S. Oh, yes, I voted for Ken Masters 2010 because Jerry Terrifying threatened his listeners that he would cancel the Mondo Coolcast if Ken Masters did not win. PPS, just kidding."
That explains it. I told you it was fixed.
So, Balzac, thank you for the message, buddy. And it makes perfect sense. I agree all with all what you just said. And Jerry Terrifying goes on, and he wrote a message under it. And he goes, "Dude, man, no, now it's just called Classic Elite. They have two extra dudes in the mix. Sad to see the confirmed death of GNDB Radio. Good night, sweet prince, you former kings of podcasting."
The funeral will be this Saturday.
The host of the Mondo Coolcast, Jerry Terrifying. If you have not listened to any of his episodes, you need to. Awesome stuff at MondoCoolcast.com. And do not forget about Mondo Cool TV.
Absolutely. And
one final message I'm going to wrap up with before my nose and my throat goes completely out due to the sinus infection I'm battling this week. It's from Josh S. He's wrote it a few times before. And he goes in to say, "GNDB, Tony, and Scott. Well, I heard the new podcast. To me, merging the two podcasts is like pouring barbecue sauce on a peanut butter sandwich. It's a waste of perfectly good sauce, and it doesn't help the sandwich either. I think you guys should just go back to just the two of you. Even if it was a shorter podcast, perhaps 30 minutes, keep it lean and mean. You didn't really explain the reason for the merger, so you may not want to go back, but I think you should. I mean, there's a reason that they never had those guys from Lethal Weapon do a movie where they teamed up with Tango and Cash. Wait a minute. That sounds awesome. Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon, Josh S. Well, thank you very much, Josh, for your message. And it's like we said before, everybody, just give it some time. Just like good old Novocaine. Give it some time. It's going to work on in, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
we just absolutely. Ask for your patience.
But appreciate the feedback. It's just going to help things keep getting better and going forward. So I think that's going to wrap up. I think it's going to wrap up episode 64, right? So we just want to give a big, big thank you to Mike Young, the creative director of Madden 12, for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate it, Mike. Also, just want to say thank you very much for Jennifer Hale to make the time to speak to DB at MetSuraCon. Thanks for everybody also that has been very supportive on Facebook, liking the pictures, subscribing to YouTube, all that fun stuff. So,
speaking of Scott, we're about to hit 1,000 subs on YouTube.
I know, that's a big milestone.
Pretty exciting. So we're in 6 years, we'll be caught up with what GNDB's channel was.
Just a quick thank you to Hapog and Aver TV for supporting the YouTube channel and helping us out tremendously. And everybody, go make sure to check out our stuff at glitchedout.com. Other than that, we will see everyone next week for episode 65.